All right, so Matt, I was watching Australian Master Chef last night with Ashley. I don't know if you've ever watched that or not, but some guy on there, he made this meringue, like this big, elaborate, fancy meringue, and everybody cheered and like was happy that he, and I turned to Ashley and I said, that's weird. Normally Australians boomerang.
I can't believe I didn't see that one coming at all.
Good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm good. I'm still laughing at the joke.
That's good. I told you this the other day, and I'll just tell our listeners this. I will never top the Michael's teacher joke.
Oh, no. No, that is the best
ever. One. And I want to tell it again, but I can't, because it's one of those one-time moment things. Now, I tell like other people this in real life, like I'll tell them that joke. I think I'm running out of people who have not heard it yet, but random people at Michael's school during the PTA, I'll say something and Ashley's like, don't do that. No, no. But if you haven't heard that joke, you've got to go back and find the, I don't remember the episode.
I don't either,
but
it's been a couple of years.
Yeah. And it is on our Instagram. Maybe I can find the video and I'll reshare the video, but that is the pinnacle of Adam jokes that will never be hit. I'll never reach that brass ring again. But before we get started, we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting if you're wanting to do that. They've got it there. So podbelly.com. Also, while you're on the internet, go to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Now, here's the thing. If you want to help us out right now, the best way to help Matt and I out is sign up and become a patron. You get a bunch of bonus stuff, bunch of banked bonus episodes. Our $10 a month patrons, they get our second show, almost said new show. It's not new anymore, but our second show, Side Quest, that we do, where basically, Matt and I, the whole point of it is it's a strictly comedy show where Matt and I try to get the other one, whether it be freak them out, make them laugh, whatever. That's the point, is just telling stories, making the other one laugh, and hopefully make y'all laugh in turn. But you get that, and you get ad-free audio and video versions of the episodes, plus a bonus episode a week. Our $5 gets the ad-free stuff as well as the bonus episode, and our $1 gets a bonus episode every week. Now, the reason that's the best way to help us out is because our ads right now are in the tank. And I'm just going to be honest with you guys. I don't know if it's the economy, what it is, but we're not the only ones in that boat. I have reached out to our friends, and we're not the only ones in the boat, so I don't know what it is, but the ads are just not there. So the best way that you can help me and Matt is to go sign up, become a patron, donate to the show, and get a bunch of bonus stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, we're not asking for handouts. We've got a lot of content for you.
Get your money's worth.
You know, and it is not just extra Graveyard Tales. Our Patreon bonus episodes cover a huge array of topics. Most of the time, they are nothing we would talk about on Graveyard Tales. And our show Side Quest, like Adam said, it is totally different. It is not even remotely close to Graveyard Tales. We're not changing Graveyard Tales. We're going to keep this going.
Mm-hmm.
But if the work that Adam and I do is something you enjoy and appreciate, we would appreciate you checking out our bonus stuff, donating to the show. Like I said, you get a ton of bonus
yep.
material. So check it out. Now's a great time. We're kind of in the dog days of summer. You need something to listen to out by the pool. Hit it. I mean, you got people going on vacations. You got a long road trip coming up. You know, now's a great time. Instead of buying that audio book that you're thinking about doing, sign up, you know, be a patron and get all this extra content that you haven't heard before.
Right. And just as a warning, y'all, SideQuest is not a kid-friendly show.
This is true.
Graveyard
this
Tales
is true.
Is. Graveyard Tales, we try to keep PG-13. SideQuest is not. SideQuest is R-rated. We do cuss. We talk about stuff that, you know, that's the show. Like Graveyard Tales, we said, we're not going to do anything that we don't want our kids to hear come out of our mouths.
Yeah.
SideQuest is what we talk about amongst friends. So
yeah, exactly.
Adult friends. So that is if you wanted to hear us talk about personal stuff and all that, go over there. SideQuest is the way to go. But the other way, we have that one sponsor, MeUndies, that still has a code. So go get yourself some MeUndies. If this wasn't a PG-13 show, I'd drop trowel and show you my sea turtle MeUndies that I'm wearing right now. Because they are sea turtles, man. I love them. They're comfortable, and they keep my giblets nice and cool. So find our MeUndies code and use that, and that will help us out as well. They have men's and women's style, and they have bathing suits. Ashley just ordered me some bathing suits for this year from MeUndies, so I'm looking forward to getting those. Yeah. Now, Matt, that's all I got. So. Why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay, so tonight, we initially were looking at a location on Prince Edward Island in Canada, and we actually discovered that there was more haunted activity going on this island than we knew about.
Right.
So we expanded a little bit and included some additional haunted information from Prince Edward Island. So we're going to talk primarily about the King's Playhouse. It's one of the most haunted places, definitely on the island, but it's on those lists of most haunted places in Canada. But we've also got a few other things that we're going to share with you, and we'll get into more detail as we go along. But the King's Playhouse, it's more active than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily frightening in any way, but definitely active. And a lot, we say this a lot, the history plays into why a place is haunted, how it is haunted. You know, what kind of experience could you anticipate going in for a visit or an investigation or whatever? The history on this place is kind of sparse.
Mm-hmm.
So it really doesn't fit into the traditional, like a haunted hotel
right.
or a haunted hospital or something like that.
Right.
Okay. But we are going to cover the history because it is fairly interesting. So Adam, let's start off. Tell everybody about the history of the King's Playhouse in Prince Edward Island.
All right. So, like we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information, and you can keep going. Now, one of the things that Matt and I talked about with the history being sparse is, what was that song? Blame Canada. I'm just going to blame Canada.
For from South Park?
Yeah. there were several times that I thought, fantastic. I have found the information that I need. I keep looking, and it says to continue please subscribe. And Matt ran into it too. So if you want history about Canadian places, at least the ones we were looking into, you apparently have to pay money to these websites. Now, I don't know if it's that way if you're in Canada or if it's just because I'm in the U.S. trying to look up Canadian websites, but whatever it is, I'm blaming you, Canada, for withholding your information from me.
What's weird though, we've looked at other places in Canada, not run into this.
No.
This is
new.
It seems fairly new, but I wasn't going to subscribe to a Canadian magazine or a newspaper.
No.
To get some information. It was kind of bizarre.
And
most of the time when you do run into this, when you start digging deeper into, you know, internet research, you are going to run across these sites, but 9 times out of 10, you're able to find the same information on a free site.
You can mesh it together from multiple sources.
It just was a lot of that was not available. Now, I was able to find more of the haunted events for the King's Playhouse because more people were talking about that. So there were more articles. There was, write-ups about paranormal investigations that had occurred there. They really celebrate it. They do events there geared towards, kind of an amateur paranormal investigation. So that was more readily available. But when you're just looking for, the meat and bones of how did this location come to be? Mm-hmm. It just wasn't out there.
No. And like you try to look up who has performed at the King's Playhouse and all you get is from 2019 forward. And it's like, so nobody was at the King's Playhouse from the 1800s when it was built.
They didn't do any shows.
They didn't do anything. I even reached out I shot an email over to the King's Playhouse, and as of this recording, have not heard back because I was like, hey, looking into the history of your place, where can I find this? Do y'all have any? Nothing. It was crickets. And maybe I'll add the cricket sound effect in here as what I got from them. But anyway, let's look at Georgetown on Prince Edward Island. Initially, because this is where the King's Playhouse is located. Now, Georgetown is located at the tip of the peninsula that's between Brudenell and Montague Rivers. So the site was designated as the capital of the county. And believe it or not, it was named after King George III. I mean, hard to believe, by Captain Samuel Holland in 1765. Now, historically, the Mi'kmaq people were the ones that lived here. They set up their camps in this area, and they used the natural resources of the area, like fish, shellfish, wild game, stuff like that. But they also used the fertile soil that was there, and they wanted to take advantage of it, so they planted gardens. And it was a good living place for the Mi'kmaq people. They apparently called it Samuk, which means sandy shore. So that was the initial name of the Georgetown area. But settlers began to arrive in this area around 1802. But it was 30 years, so in the 1830s, before a town began to grow. So like a lot of towns on the coast, the economy and stuff was closely tied to the sea and what it could do for the settlers there. So over the next 40 years, that whole estuary was transformed into a shipbuilding center and a transportation center and anything you can think of that has to do with sailing, shipping, and work in the sea. That's what this estuary became. Well, in the early 1850s, Georgetown signed a fishing treaty with New England and the United States. And because of this, there were hundreds of fishing boats that began to arrive in the area to fish herring just north of the island. So New England would send their ships up there and be able to fish and get all this herring and bring it back to the U.S. So it brought money into Prince Edward Island.
Yeah, you know, and I always have to go and look at the geography of some of these places because I can picture a lot of things in my mind, but when I look at a map, I always am surprised when I look at a map. do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I'm laughing because I know that the surprise, it sounds stupid, but I'm surprised too, especially with the Northeast.
Well, like for example, you know, I live just north of Nashville. When I think of Chicago, I think Chicago is way the hell away from me,
mm-hmm.
you know, much further west. In reality, it's damn near straight up and it's an 8-hour drive from here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I drive 8 hours to go to the beach.
Right.
You know, I could, if I turned and went north, I'd be in Chicago.
Why?
Crying out loud.
Why though?
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, at least I'm going to a Cubs game.
Right.
You know that. So when I look at the map, I'm like, God, it just, in my head, that's not how it looks.
Right.
So, you know, talking about Prince Edward Island. So you're looking at the map, you know, Prince Edward Island is not like, it's not like a Caribbean island. It's way out in the ocean, mm-hmm. but it's right off the coast of New Brunswick, which borders Maine.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, you know, it's right there. You know, there are sea passages, you know, through that area that would take you right into the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of U.S. visitors that have gone back and forth to Prince Edward Island.
Sure.
So the trade route is, you know, it's there. But again, in my head, you know, it's way out like in the mm-hmm. in the damn North
it's like
Sea.
Hawaii or something.
Yeah, but it's yeah. not.
No.
You know, it's just right there. It just happens to be. It's like Long Island. You
yeah.
know? It's like sticks yep. out. It's right here. City's right over there. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. And I know some people will say, well, that close, why did they have to do a fishing treaty with Canada so that we can fish it? Well, here's the thing. You may not think about it unless you do fish and unless you deep sea fish. But when you're talking about the shores and stuff of the country and the waters right off of it, they basically own that and anything in that water. So now you get however many miles, I don't remember, but out from the shore, then it becomes international waters. So you can do whatever you want to there. But like, if we caught a boat in U.S. waters from Canada or Mexico and they were fishing, they would get a fine. We'd take all their fish, anything that they caught, and send them on their merry way. And it's the same with Canada. If they were to just have a boat from New England come up there and start fishing for herring without this treaty, the right papers, well, that's basically Prince Edward Island's fish.
Yeah.
So they can't do it without this treaty. But they signed that treaty, which then brought money into the island and helped them out. Well, the harbor at Georgetown allowed these fishing boats to buy supplies while they were there. And also they were able to take shelter in the harbor during bad weather. So it, again, was kind of a boon for Prince Edward Island and Georgetown. Now, by the 1860s, Georgetown had bankers, blacksmiths, shoemakers, brewers, cabinet makers, and a bodger who produced the well-known Batchelder chair. I don't know, but
what?
Yeah, I don't know. That was one of the things.
I got to look this
yeah,
up.
You look it up. But they had carriage makers, coopers, druggists, general stores. They had it all. Even saddle makers and, like I said, shipyard sailmakers, they had everything. They even had two foundries there by the 1860s. Well, in 1873, Andrew Archibald MacDonald, Georgetown's father of Confederation, put forward the motion to join Canada. So at the time, they weren't part of Canada. They were their own province, their own country or whatever. Well, in 1873, they said, you know, why don't we join Canada? And so they did. Well, the Prince Edward Island Railway reached all the way down to Georgetown in 1875. So trains were on these interlocking schedules with regular ferries. So you were able to catch a train, go across the island, catch a ferry, go over into Canada. Georgetown Harbor was the last port to freeze over in heavy winters. So they got the most business because people could get in and out longer than anywhere else.
Yeah.
It was often the only point of contact with the mainland too. So shipbuilding, fishing, and lumber remained as the major industries there for many years. Did you find the chair, Matt?
I cannot find the chair. I did find a recliner that is done up like Batman, which is a little bizarre. Spell it.
Bat, child, E-R, all one word.
Okay, that's what I did. All one word.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not getting anything.
Look up Bodger, B-O-D-G-E-R.
A Bodger says a person who makes or repairs something badly or clumsily. Okay.
All right.
Oh, yeah. I did say, okay, here we go. A Bodger is a British term for a wood carver or a wood turner, especially one who makes chairs of beech wood.
Oh, all right. Well.
So if you make a beech wood chair, you could be
classified
as a Bodger.
Well, Roger Bodger. All right. So let's look at the Playhouse real quick. Do a brief history on what I was able to find on Canadian information here. I'm still angry with you, Canada. I know it's not all everybody's fault up there, but I'm mad at you, Canada. You withheld history from me, and I'm not happy about it. All right, so the King's Playhouse was built in 1897. So being that it was built then, that makes it the longest consecutively running theater in all of Canada.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. That's why I was hoping that there would be a lot of history here, because it was built in 1897. That's a long time ago. So, but no, it's not there. Well, it's a 300-seat theater that's located in Georgetown, Prince Edward Island, like I said. Now, there's a legend that says there was an old graveyard in the area that was torn up during the construction of the building, and it said that some of the graves were destroyed as well while they were trying to build the stuff here. So, that could add to some spooky happenings. The building was originally designed by prolific architect William Critchlow Harris. He was well known for building churches, houses, and halls across the Maritimes. So it was built originally as like a multi-purpose town hall and theater in 1887, and soon became a gathering place for local and touring performers. They say even Harry Houdini performed there. So that's kind of cool. It's any place that Houdini performed, I think, is kind of neat. There's just a mystique about Houdini that I like. So this theater was completely destroyed, though, by fire on March 3rd of 1983. But because everybody there loved this theater, they didn't want to see it go. There were a ton of volunteers and help from the county. They rebuilt it and reopened it to the public 14 months later. A whole theater rebuilt in 14 months.
Yeah, and that's pretty impressive.
Isn't it?
Especially with all the work done by volunteers.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And surprisingly, it's still standing. It didn't fall down because you get some volunteers, they're like, hey, I don't know how to nail this here. I'm just going to put some glue on it.
Some scotch tape.
Now, here's a piece of chewing gum. This will hold that 4x4, won't it? But it's
that's how it would work if you or I were doing it. Actually, no. Actually, more like me. You'd do it correctly.
Yeah, the one thing I can do, Matt, I can't do much, but the one thing I can do is build stuff out of wood.
Yeah, sure can.
I might not be able to rebuild an engine, but you want a wooden engine? I can make you one that looks like wood.
That'd be slick. Do that.
All right, I might do that.
If you can get it to work.
Oh, I don't know if I can get it to work. I might be able to get gears to turn on it, but
yeah.
You've seen those, as a tangent here, have you seen those all wood trucks?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, they got the engine, but everything else, like the engine and the axle and everything is regular and the tires are regular, but the whole cab, the
body
and
everything,
yeah, is wood. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. They're called the tinder box.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. That might be, everybody wants to rebuild a car when they retire. I'm going to just build one out of wood when I retire.
That's right.
But the new theater that they built is an exact replica of the old theater. So, you know, it's new, built in, basically finished in 1984, but it looks exactly like the old one. Well, nowadays, the theater thrives as an art center. And it showcases and hosts artists from around the world. And its art gallery actually features a lot of talented locals, they say. So yeah. If you're a local, you can get your art put in the King's Playhouse.
Yeah. So in this case, not only does there's not enough history to really contribute to the hauntings, the building itself that's haunted is not old enough.
Right. Right.
For you to consider, yeah, this place might be haunted.
Yeah. To have ghosts from way back when.
You know, but the land that it's on could potentially be holding on to some energy that allowed, you know, spirits to remain there. I read a really good article that essentially the gist of it was the spirits that were there appreciated the work that the volunteers had done so well that they just decided to stay.
I said, yeah, you did it good. I'll stay.
It was so close to the original that they appreciated it and they stayed. If that's not the nicest thing that, you know, I've ever heard about a haunted place, you know, and you know, it's perfect that it comes out of Canada.
I was just about to say that.
It's like even the ghosts are nice in Canada.
Yeah, that's perfect for Canada.
Now, the King's Playhouse has the typical haunted fair with visitors and staff reporting hearing footsteps, doors opening and closing, lights being turned on and off, and items going missing and then turning up in unusual places. Some visitors have even reported hearing their own names being spoken.
Oh, weird.
That's a little weird. If you're a visitor to a place you've never been there, to hear your own name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can be a little disconcerting.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You're walking through, you're kind of thinking, hey, they say this theater's haunted. And then you hear, Matt. You're like, I hope there's somebody that works here named Matt.
Right.
If it knows my name, you know, that's creepy.
Yeah. Leroy.
Or if it said, Matt, eh?
Yeah.
Now, on one occasion, a former board member was taking a shower, and he called out for his 150-pound dog. Now, the animal began barking in the hallway and wouldn't come into the corridor.
Hmm.
He just, you know, just stood there and barked. So they make a point of it saying this is a 150 pound dog. It's probably not going to be afraid of much outside of a bear.
Yeah.
But whatever it sensed or it could see, it wasn't going to deal with it. It was going to stay right there outside of the corridor.
Yeah. And it depends, I guess, on the breed of the dog, not to get too weird into the weeds, but I've known some 100-plus-pound dogs that are big sissies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got one. I live with one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A 100-pound bulldog that's afraid of everything.
Yeah, right?
He'll bark at it, but he ain't going to mess with it.
Right. You know? And the barking now, is just going, Dad, Dad, there's something over there. Dad.
Pretty much.
Dad, get it before it gets me. Dad. Dad.
Now, paranormal investigators have done investigations in the King's Playhouse, and they do have investigations that are open to the public, as I mentioned earlier. And since it is a theater, the investigators typically do their presentations from the stage. Now, one night, one of the investigators used the captain's chair, okay, uh-oh, which is we're going to get into, but there is a special chair there, as a stage prop during one of the shows. Now, during that particular show, there were an array of technical malfunctions, okay? Things just weren't going right. The investigator said that the next night, they put the chair in the audience at the back of the hall and everything went smoothly. Hmm. But whenever a patron has accidentally sat in the chair, lights flicker or machinery will turn on and off. Now, the ghost in question here is affectionately known as Captain George.
Hmm.
And this is Captain George's chair. Okay. And it's a name, this is interesting, that was officially given on May 22nd, 2003, when the town council voted and passed a resolution that this is what the resident spirit of King's Playhouse would be called.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
That's really cool, actually.
And I watched a show where they actually showed a framed, it looked like the original. It had the seal and everything, that had all of the information, an official statement that said, from this point forward, this entity, this spirit, will be known as Captain George.
Huh.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Pretty neat. You know, most people just give it a nickname and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, the whole town said this is what it's going to be called. Now, Captain George does more than just turn the lights on and off and get upset if somebody sits in his chair, which they do keep vacant for him. And it now sits front row center and it is reserved for every show and no one sits there. But the apparition of Captain George looks like a military captain and he visits the theater during showtime, typically seen carrying a lantern and dressed in a long coat. So, the old sea captain, the statues and the pictures and everything, the long coat, the white beard, the pipe and the hat, you know, the weathered sea captain. That,
yep,
that is what people describe the apparition of Captain George.
Kind of like the fish sticks guy. Except not in yellow. He's in like dark.
Yeah,
color.
You know, if you've looked, the Gorton's fisherman is he's now like in a rain outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Cause, you know, I like to make fish tacos cheaply.
Yep.
And you know, those Gorton's fish planks are perfect for the fish tacos we make.
Yeah.
And I noticed that. I was like,
yeah.
Has he always worn like a raincoat and a rain hat like you would see on a ship?
I feel like he has, but
maybe.
I don't know.
They've updated him. You can tell.
He's definitely newer.
He's a little more modern looking now.
On a random note, you said fish tacos. I have to say this. But we buy fish sticks all the time.
Yeah.
Because Michael will eat them, but also because I like fish stick sandwiches. Now, I don't know if you've ever done it. but make you about 5 or 6 of those fish sticks. All right. Get some bread. You can put whatever condiments you want on there, but I put a little bit of mayonnaise and then some hot sauce. And then I put a little bit of cheese, the fish sticks, and then I dump malt vinegar all over those fish sticks and make me a sandwich like that.
You make a Filet-O-Fish.
Basically.
If you used a hamburger bun, that'd be it.
Yeah.
It's essentially a Filet-O-Fish sandwich.
Basically, Filet-O-Fish with malt vinegar and hot sauce. But if you're never done it, my dad taught me that as a kid because he was a single dad for a while and stuck with it. I like it. Fish stick sandwiches.
Look, and here's a tangent. If you've never eaten a Filet-O-Fish at McDonald's.
Never have.
You sit there and you look at their menu of burgers and chicken, and then you see this one fish sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? One fish sandwich. It's fantastic. I'm not kidding you.
I've never
and
had
it's
it.
Fantastic. Now, when I rarely go to McDonald's, but I remember 20 some odd years ago, I got on a kick, man, and I don't know why. I guess I needed to eat, and I didn't want a burger at that. And I said, "Give me a Filet-O-Fish."
Yeah,
I've never had one. Let me get one. And I was like, "This is awesome."
Huh.
And so I got on a kick where, you know, for about a year, if I went by McDonald's, that's what I got. You know, and they, man, years ago when they would run them, like you could get like two for $2 or some kind of crazy crap like that. Man, I was down in some fish sandwiches. I weighed a hell of a lot more then than I do now. And you can know, see why.
You know why I've never eaten a Filet-O-Fish? It's out of principle because they put half of a piece of cheese on there.
I guess I never realized it was half of a piece of cheese.
They cut the cheese slice in half and you only get half a piece of cheese on a Filet-O-Fish. And I refuse to eat it because that is against my morals.
Yeah, it's like cheating you out of some cheese there.
Exactly. Then if you want a whole piece of cheese, you got to pay extra to get the whole piece of cheese on there. So I've never had that. And I've never had a McRib. I refuse.
Dude, the McRib, I'm telling you, you, and I know you like fat boy food.
Mm-hmm.
The McRib is fat boy food. Now, there is absolutely nothing about a McRib that is similar to ribs other than the flavor and the barbecue sauce. I don't know what they do to shove that meat into that mold that makes it kind of look like ribs. But man, they are good. I don't know what it is. I haven't had one in a really long time. They may suck now.
Yeah.
But way back when it first came out, I was all about it. I loved a McRib.
I may have to break my long stance of not doing it and get me a McRib.
Yeah. But I hadn't been to McDonald's in a hot minute. Way back when, especially when I was just, you know, in college.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. McRib all the way, baby.
Maybe
McRib and a Filet-O-Fish, you know, double quarter pounder on Tuesdays, you know, when they,
yeah. Hey, if I do the McRib, I will make it an Instagram story. I'll put it on Instagram of my first McRib.
It's good. I think you'll dig it. Don't get your expectations too high. I may have overdone it for you already.
Yeah,
but it's a good sandwich. Anyway.
We'll see.
Back to old Captain George. So here's the thing. I said he does a little bit more than just flicker on the lights and just kind of appear. He has also been known to grab the ankles of members of the audience.
Oh, geez. That would freak you out.
Now, that's something. I mean, you know, if you're sitting watching a show and all of a sudden you feel something grab your ankle, you're going to jump.
Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine you're watching a play and something grabs your ankles and just right in the middle of some serious part in the play, somebody's, jump up out of their seat because something just grabbed their ankle. I would pay to just see that.
Yeah, right. Get a super cut of all of those when that happens.
Yep. Now, actors and technicians say that they have seen Captain George apparition walking on the stage and even behind the stage. So he pretty much gets around the theater as he pleases.
All right, y'all. So most of the year, most guys don't think about underwear material or underwear technology. You know, like breathability, the quick drying, moisture wicking stuff, anti-odor. You think, why do I need this? But then summer hits and it's 105 here in DFW and you're sweating everywhere. Like places you didn't know had sweat glands are sweating. So all of a sudden, the breathability and quick drying, moisture wicking stuff sounds great. And that's why you need to get on the Me Undies train. Like Matt and I, and basically our whole families are now on the Me Undies train. They've got something for every guy and girl, because our wives love Me Undies.
Yep.
And they've got micromodal fabric, which is breathable and comfortable. And my favorite are the ball caddies, because they got that little pouch that keeps everything separated. It keeps you from bat winging, and it keeps things, you know, comfy in their own little thing. And I'll tell you, Matt, besides their underwear, what else I've fallen in love with is their swim trunks.
That's what you said.
Dude. All right. So quick story. I bought some cheaper ones a while back, quickly returned them because as soon as I tried them on, things were just crushed and it was painful. I don't know. They were men's, but they were cut like women's, so there was no room for anything. I think it shoved everything up inside me and it just started hurting. So I returned those and we said, why are we screwing around? Let's get Me Undies swim trunk. We did. Dude, it's a game changer. They've got the compression liner on the inside, but they've got the little pouch in the front to keep things comfortable and they dry quickly. There's no chafing because of the inner like compression liner on the shorts. And dude, it is a game changer for swim trunks. Michael even said, I need more of these. Can I have more of them? And you know, most of us don't care as kids what our swim trunks are like, but when you get a good pair, you know it. And
that's right.
If you go in the pool, and ladies, Ashley loves her Me Undies bathing suit. So don't just do underwear. Go get their swim trunks, their bathing suits. Everything they got is fantastic.
Yeah, Amanda's got a bra from there. She absolutely loves it. You know, Brooks, Miranda, and myself, we love our Me Undies. And you know what? They've got style for everyone. You know, if you're like me and one of the men that suffer from this, you know, this condition known as noacetol. And they've got a cut for your butt, I promise. Over 10 different styles, ranging from boxer briefs to jock straps. The pouch underwear, as Adam mentioned, the ball caddy that keeps you from bat winging and sticking everywhere. It really gives you support in over 100 different colors and prints, ranging all over from classic black to dinosaur. And they have unmatched comfort. Me Undies Signature Super Soft Micromodal Fabric is breathable, stretchy, and oh so comfy, making it ideal for all-day wear. If you need something even more breathable and summer-proof, check out the Move Me line, which I just ordered, with Breathe Fabric, which has moisture-wicking and anti-odor technology, perfect for working out or just keeping you extra cool on these sweltering days. So if you want to be like me and Adam and Amanda and Ashley and all of us who are thrilled with our Me Undies, all you got to do is go to MeUndies.com/graveyard. That's MeUndies.com/graveyard, and you'll get 20% off your first order plus free shipping.
That's right. Go to MeUndies.com/graveyard, GRAVEYARD, and you'll get 20% off plus free shipping. Me Undies, comfort from the outside in.
Now, on June 8th, 2013, Steve and Carol was filming with his iPhone while Carrie and Lyndon Mahar had their wedding photos taken in the King's Playhouse. Now, Mr. Carroll didn't notice anything unusual at first, but when he walked out of the theater and he replayed the video, he noticed a dark shadow in the shape of a man pass over the couple's faces. And Mr. Carroll later said, "I don't really believe in this stuff, but this is pretty weird." He's like, "No one could have walked behind me because there was no room."
Yeah.
And Mr. Carroll says he stands about 6'4" and was at the extreme end of the theater stage. Hence, there was no room behind him. The only male shadow possible would have been his, according to his son, Dean, who was in the room at the time. He says there were a few, maybe 15 people taking pictures below. And he says, "I have no idea what that was."
Yeah, that's now, weird.
Carrie Mahar, who is from Georgetown, watched the video just after it was taken. And she said, "I grew up in Georgetown and everyone knows about George." Said it made me a little nervous, but it wouldn't stop me from going back. But she said her new husband, he don't want to go back.
Well, I mean,
the shadow was enough for him.
Yeah. I mean, you go to this place that is haunted. She knew it was haunted.
Sure.
I'm sure she told her husband that this place is haunted. There's this story of Captain George and all that, but you get freaked out when you actually catch some. I mean, it's like the investigator that tries to bow up on a spirit,
yeah,
talk crap to him, and then when you actually hear something, you go, "Oh my God," and like run.
When they start getting dizzy and nauseated, they wonder why.
Yeah, exactly.
"It's attacking me." Well, you attacked it first.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you remember what you called it 30 seconds ago? I'd do that to you, too.
Now, Julie Haddow, who's a former executive director of King's Playhouse, said that she dealt with Captain George's antics for more than a year. She said, "Swinging doors open without wind when no one's around, you'll hear noises and other things." Randall Fletcher, who was a former Playhouse board chairman, said he had never had a personal encounter with George, but he had heard plenty of stories. Fletcher says one time there was a cover band that was performing. The lead singer walked out of the theater because she kept hearing someone talking in her ear.
Really?
Like during the show, he's hearing something talking in her ear. Now, Fletcher did discuss a time when a psychic was brought in for an event in 2014. At dinner, before things got started, she said she was picking up someone named Charlie or Charles that was associated with a fire. In 1983, when the Playhouse burned to the ground, the mayor at the time was the late Charlie Martel. Now, Fletcher said he asked the psychic if she could find out the name of the ghost that was there. And she said, "Not right now." There was a spirit demanding her attention, saying, "You're paying attention to the wrong one. I'm the important one." The psychic said the spirit was bossy, tall and thin, and a very old spirit. So this probably wasn't Charlie Martel.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was the mayor in 83, he's not a very old spirit.
No.
So the psychic asked the spirit who was running the theater, and it responded with Randall Fletcher's name. Of course, this is from a psychic who was just introduced to Randall Fletcher, saying that the spirit told her his name. So I don't know how to take that.
Yeah, I don't know either.
If I know your name, and then I tell you that a spirit says, they just told me Adam Ballinger.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to...
You're kind of looking at me going, "Sure it did."
Yeah, you know? I'm sure it did, yeah.
You already know my name.
Yeah.
You know, you...
You also, did it also tell you I'm wearing a hat?
Yeah.
Did it?
But the spirit then told the psychic that it was named John or Jonathan. What? And if you pick this up, you can tell when we are recording this the night before the 4th of July.
Oh, yeah.
Fireworks. So in the U.S., everybody is going bananas with fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
So my neighbor has been shooting fireworks all week, and I'm getting the booms right now.
Yep. Anyway, a little ambiance.
Yeah. Moving on. The spirit told the psychic, as I said, its name was John or Jonathan. One of the paranormal investigators told her that there was a Jean-Pierre Roma that was associated with that area. And at that point, the spirit said, thank you. So this was, I'm the important one. I'm the important ghost here. Okay. And so Jean-Pierre Roma was apparently associated with that area in Georgetown, you know, a long, long time prior.
Mm-hmm.
So when the PEI investigative crew, PEI is what I was like, PEI, I'm sitting here reading about Prince Edward Island, wondering what the hell does PEI stand for?
What is PEI?
Paranormal event. No, Prince Edward Island, dummy. the PEI investigative crew, they had a TV show called Haunted, which initially investigated the King's Playhouse. At the end of the investigation, the crew said, "We're so glad to get out of here. We're glad we're not staying the night." Now, I don't think it was as much as they were legitimately frightened by what was going on. It was just so active that it creeped them out.
Yep. Probably stressful too.
Here's the thing. You could have a very nice and polite conversation with a spirit for hours. And when you're done, you'd be like, I don't know if I want to come back.
Right.
You know,
right.
That was really weird. Yep, you know,
too much.
They weren't attacking me. But that was crazy. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I get that. Now, Dylan Garland, who is the TV show Haunted's photography director, said that the team definitely had some unusual experiences. He said, we had movement with stuff, visual movement with a couple of things in the theater area of the King's Playhouse. Very heavy stuff that shouldn't have been moving. Mainly, what got me the most was in the back area of King's Playhouse, there's a park area. Said, we heard footsteps back there that we couldn't explain.
Hmm.
And Garland said inside the theater, one of the large light fixtures started swinging in an abnormal way. Said it was like somebody somewhere with a fishing wire. They were hauling it one way to get the momentum to swing the other direction. But these are big, heavy chandelier-like light fixtures. They're suspended high enough that you're not going to be able to reach up and push them.
Right.
You're not going to be able to blow them. And indoors and without any wind blowing inside or anything like that, apparently they are large enough that, an air vent blowing directly on it wasn't going to be enough to cause it to begin to move, or at least in a fashion that they're describing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between something kind of shaking back and forth to you feeling like that looks like somebody is tugging on it with a fishing line and then letting it go.
Somebody's swinging.
Starting it to swing. Yeah. Garland said that the crew also captured disembodied voices upstairs in the theater. So, a whole gambit of different experiences, none of which are horribly scary, seems fairly innocuous, but very common. I found numerous stories that I didn't include because there was, they were very anecdotal, two actors rehearsing late into one evening for an upcoming performance, and they go backstage and come face to face with Captain George.
Yeah.
A maintenance guy, or maintenance woman, I'm sorry, walking across the stage and hears whistling, or a crew member coming through at the end of the night, turning off all the lights only to turn around and find that they're all right back on. Those kind of things. Of course, if you're in an empty theater at night by yourself and you turn off the lights and the lights turn back on by themselves, yeah, that's probably going to creep you out a little bit.
Sure.
Okay. Sure. But nonetheless, this is a lot of activity for a small theater in a small town on an island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did find some stuff, and Adam and I talked about this the other day, that there it wasn't documented well, but there was some indication that there was a graveyard underneath the original theater.
Yep.
And that when the original theater was being built, that one or two of these graves may have been disturbed. Of course, at that time, they're not going to really just halt construction. But as I said at the beginning, there seems to be an energy that would have held spirits in that particular place and in that ground in the land. Mm. And that's why a fairly new building would have this much paranormal activity.
Yeah. I think land
it was just holding on to it.
Yeah. Land has a lot to do with hauntings, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think in a lot of ways, if you can find the history of the land, that is where you're really going to see the reason behind the haunting.
Now, not necessarily sure, the building.
If you've got a castle that was built in the 1200s and all this violence and death and things occurred in there, or they had one of those oubliettes where they just pitched people down at the bottom and left them to die. Yeah, you think, oh, well, this is why this place is haunted. That would explain the spirit that was there, but it doesn't necessarily say why it was haunted. It's the energy. Something is holding on to that energy. A big stone castle? Yeah, probably. But what about that land? What happened where the castle was built 1,000 years ago?
Yeah, because there are places with similarly tragic histories that don't have quite the extent of paranormal activity. But then other places do. Mm-hmm. So there's something about the land that causes an amplification of it, or
that's a good term.
Like a lockbox to hold it in.
Yeah. Yeah. It somehow amplifies it so that the living either can recognize it or interact with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, that's the King's Playhouse. I told you we found some other places.
Right.
Let's talk about the West Point Lighthouse, Adam.
All right, let's do it. And I am a big fan of lighthouses. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I think they're cool. And when we go to Florida, we try to tour a lighthouse just because they're neat.
Oh, yeah.
But the West Point Lighthouse. Now, construction of this lighthouse, it began in 1875. So it's an old lighthouse, and it was done by the contractors Muggridge and Company, and apparently they were a big construction company contractors at the time. This was the first lighthouse that was built on Prince Edward Island by the federal government following the Confederation in 1873. So it's associated with the transfer of responsibility of the navigational aids from the colonial government to the federal Department of Marine. So it's I guess it's very significant in the sense of the colonial government is handing over that responsibility to basically the federal government. And this was the first lighthouse that they did to have that responsibility. So they love them some firecrackers over there, don't they?
I'm telling you, man, they're going nuts. It's been all week.
We just had this year has been the fewest that we've ever had because the police department has been putting out signs everywhere that says you light it, we cite it. They're illegal in town, and we'll get you. And I'm hoping that kind of keeps it down a little bit within the neighborhoods. But anyway, the lighthouse actually became operational in May of 1876, and William Lighthouse Willie McDonald was the first keeper of the lighthouse. McDonald held his post until 1925, Matt. So from 1876 to 1925. And he was succeeded by the only other person to serve as lighthouse keeper, Benny McIsaac. And that was, he served until the lighthouse became automated in 1963. So this lighthouse has technically only had two keepers, according to what I found, which is actually pretty wild that a lighthouse has run this long and only had two keepers. Now, West Point Lighthouse is the tallest square tapered tower on Prince Edward Island, and it stands 67 foot, 8 inches tall.
Yeah, it's pretty tall. And it's cool looking the way it's not.
It really is.
It's not a cylinder. You know, it's.
Yep.
You know, it's that square taper. Yeah.
Yep. When I first read it, I thought it was 6 foot 7 inches tall. And I'm like,
it's just a guy with a light on his head.
Yeah. That's not much taller than me. How is that productive? And then I went, oh no, 67 foot dummy. It helps to be literate when you're doing these kind of things. But Matt mentioned that the look of the lighthouse. Now, the squared tapered design actually is a departure from earlier lighthouses that most of them were octagonal in design. So if you look at old lighthouses, they're octagons, just like a octagon on top of octagon on top of octagon, mm-hmm. which makes it look round. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. this squared tapered, you can see that from a long way away that it looks different. And so it's just squares on top of each other that taper and get smaller as they go up. But it was originally painted with red bands, and the red bands were actually changed to black in 1915 for greater visibility. Now, I wonder, how is black more visible than red?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean? They said this is for greater visibility. So they had red on there. And to me, red catches your eye, especially when you're out at sea. There's not many red things on the horizon. But you see black in shadow and all this on the horizon. So I didn't understand that when they said it was changed to black bands for greater visibility.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, and I don't know. Against that blue sky, it does kind of stand out. I don't know that it would look any different if it was red. Maybe. I don't know. But, when you look at it, you're like, yeah, that's a cool lighthouse. Mm-hmm. You know, it does. It looks like something out of a postcard.
Yeah.
It really does.
It's really cool. Well, the lighthouse keeper's quarters were actually demolished in 1963 when it became automated, but they rebuilt it in 83 to 84, and it was redone by the West Point Development Corporation because they wanted to develop the site as a tourist destination. So when they automated it, they tore it down, and then they said, you know what? Tourists might like to see the old keeper's quarters. So they put it back in. But now they run tourism out of this lighthouse, which is, like I said, I like doing that. When I go to places that have lighthouses, I want to go see it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, a haunted lighthouse is not a new concept. In fact, we've talked about a haunted lighthouse on here. More than one. But the West Point Lighthouse has quite a bit of activity for this, you know, it's not a huge lighthouse, and it's been there a while. It's old. It's only had two keepers, so you kind of think, yeah, this is probably okay. Well, Carol Livingstone is the great-granddaughter of William Anderson MacDonald, who Adam said was the first keeper, and he served from, I had the dates in here, 50 years.
1876 to 1925.
Yeah, to 1925. And it says that he never missed a day of work or a night of work, which that's pretty incredible. But Carol says that she thinks the old keepers, Benny and McDonald, come back from time to time just to check in and see how things are going, you know, see how the light is being kept.
You know what? I might too. If that was my job for 50 years.
50 years and you never missed a night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would come back too and go, this place is going to hell. Look what y'all have done to my lighthouse.
You got all this powered light, you know. Oh. Back in my day, you had to, you know, kindle the flame and fix the oil. You had to get up there and
light it yourself. And,
yeah. And if you had a hard wind, it would blow it out and you had to run up there and get it.
Bunch of sissies now with a automatic light.
Now, after the lighthouse was converted to an inn in 1987, Livingstone volunteered to check the property on nights when the manager and his wife were away. So one night she recalls walking up to the top, and on her way down, she passed the keeper's quarters on the second floor. She says, "I thought I got a glimpse of something. A bearded man over in the corner by the window on that floor, on the second floor." She said, "I thought, that's odd," and blinked again and didn't see anything the second time, so I filed it away as just one of those unusual things. But when Livingstone told another one of the volunteers, that volunteer had a similar story. She said one evening when she was staying there, she went up to the top, checked everything out, and on the way down, locked the lighthouse door. Lo and behold, she looked up and there was a light on in the bedroom. The same bedroom that Livingstone said she thought she had seen an apparition of a bearded man.
Hmm.
The volunteer went back into the lighthouse and turned off the light. But as she got in her car, she looked up and the light was back on. She said she decided if there was something in there that wanted it on that bad, they could darn well have it. I'm not going back. I would have been like, I'm not going to go up these daggum stairs again to turn this light off again, because I know by the time I get down, they're going to have turned it back on. So leave it on. You know, we'll let the daggum light burn out.
Yeah.
But it is widely believed that the apparition that is seen is that of William MacDonald, also known as Lighthouse Willie, who served as the keeper, like Adam said, 1876 from 1925. See, I did have the date. But Lighthouse Willie is considered a friendly spirit, but does seem to have an affinity for messing with the inside lights. Guests and staff at the West Point Lighthouse Inn and Restaurant have reported mysterious lights that turn on by themselves, voices out of nowhere, cold spots, and apparitions. Now, in the late 1980s, a group of board members were at the lighthouse in March looking at plans for a kitchen renovation. It was dark when they left, and they said they carefully turned off the power except for the switches that went to the main light. Livingstone said she had left the drawings in the kitchen, so she took a flashlight to go back and get them. Remember, they turned off the power to everything but the lighthouse light. As they were leaving, Livingstone said someone from the community rushed up and asked them for help, looking for a man who had gone missing, just out of the blue. The board members divided up to search the lighthouse, and when they got to the kitchen, all the lights were on. Remember, they had turned off the power, okay? not just turned off the light. They had turned off the power. Livingstone said it wasn't 10 minutes. We had shut everything off and had to use a flashlight to go back into the kitchen. So in addition to McDonald's spirit, there is the apparition of a burning ship that sank centuries ago that has been reported many times within the nearby Northumberland Strait. So from the lighthouse, there is this phantom burning ship.
Yeah.
Now, the legend for the ship is that the crew made a deal with the devil to save themselves from a storm, and they are cursed to burn for eternity.
Oh, geez.
That's a pretty creepy story.
It is.
Now, Carol Livingstone recalls one evening when she and her sister Elizabeth were driving to a function at the local Legion. As they drove up Shore Road, they noticed flickering lights out on the sea. The sisters pulled over to get a better look, and they were shocked to see flames engulfing the masts of a ship. Now, Carol said she had heard the legends of a phantom ship, but she never imagined that she would actually see it. So Carol recalls that the evening occurred in the late 70s, early 80s, so there were no cell phones with cameras. But she did have a new film reel camera in the back of her car, which she retrieved to try to get some photos. She said there was no fog, no mists, and the sisters had not had anything to drink that night. She explains that the image was extremely vivid. So the excited ladies got back in the car, worried that they would be late for the event, but couldn't resist pulling over again to get one last look. But the ship, as well as the flames, had vanished.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, Carol's film was overexposed, so the evidence of the event was gone.
Yeah, that dang flim rim camera.
The flim is okie dokie. Now, there are also tales of a 60 to 80 foot long sea serpent swimming in the waters near West Point. This is a lot going on at this one lighthouse.
Yeah, I love this.
Now, this story was first told by the Mi'kmaq people that were the early settlers prior to Europeans arriving. But even as late as the summer of 1992, there were 9 documented reports of people witnessing this.
Oh, wow.
A number of fishermen, some still living, have seen the sea serpent. So one lady in Glenwood has no doubt about the validity of the story because, in her words, the minister's wife saw it and she wouldn't tell a lie.
Is it called the Prince Edward Serpent?
I didn't find a name for it, which is odd, but
yeah, it's a bummer.
Maybe the West Point Serpent. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she says
the minister's wife's serpent.
The minister's wife. Now that sounds ominous in some way.
Doesn't it? The minister's wife. Rated R. Coming to you this October.
Yeah.
I don't know.
but she says that several swimmers have also been rumored to have seen the sea monster. One as recently as 1983. You know, a swimmer actually saw it.
Hmm. If you're out there swimming and then that
you
crap,
see this?
Yeah. Oh my God. I would walk on water at that point. Just all the way back to the shore. I'd turn into one of those Jesus lizards that just hauls butt across the water.
You know what? If I saw this in the water, I don't think I would stick around long enough to be able to determine if it was the sea serpent or not. It would just be, it's something. Mm-hmm. It's something. It's bigger than me, and I'm in the water. Yep. It wants to eat me. That's it.
And you'd be out there followed by a trail of poop.
Done.
Just crapping the whole way out.
It would not follow me because it wouldn't follow the trail of poop.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a skunk defensive mechanism.
Now, the most recent sighting of the sea serpent comes from Allison Ellis of West Cape. Now, he saw the creature once with his grandson and great-grandson in the summer of 2002. The three were riding all-terrain vehicles to the beach in West Cape. Mr. Ellis describes the water that day as flat calm, just like the surface of a mirror. There was no ripple in the water. We're going down, and just outside the bar, there was a head sticking out of the water about 2 feet or so. They shut off their engines and then watched as the creature went straight out to sea. Now, the creature in question has been described as being 60 to 80 feet in length with a long, slim neck and a hard shaped, somewhat like a head shaped somewhat like that of a horse.
Hmm.
So it's a giant seahorse.
Honestly, that's common. We hear so many these sea serpents with a horse head.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the best way to describe the shape of it. It's obviously not just a horse.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's a connection, like it's all the same type of creature that they're seeing because it's all very similar in description.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because they said the creature's covered with dark reddish brown fur rather than scales.
Hmm.
And people have reported seeing a number of loops or coils above the surface as the creature propels itself through the water. So a lot like, you know, those images of Nessie where you see the humps, but this would be more of like the traditional sea serpent that you would see drawn on maps where you see it's much more snake-like where you see the curve come up and then another one and then another one arching up out of the water and then the head kind of arch. You know, you can buy the concrete yard decorations that makes it look like you've got a sea serpent swimming through your grass for some reason. I don't know. I've seen this multiple times. I don't understand. It's not the weirdest yard decoration I have seen, but it is up there. It's in the top five. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to tell you the weirdest one on SideQuest because I can't share it on this show. Now,
piqued my interest.
The interesting thing about this is that the Philip J. Curry Dinosaur Museum in Alberta houses many reconstructed fossils from that area. And one of these fossils resembles the sea serpent that is said to swim in the waters near the West Point Lighthouse.
That's weird.
So we've got multiple sightings over a long period of time and potentially a fossil of something that resembles it. Hmm. So it makes you wonder, this makes me think this is not a mythical creature,
right?
This is a very old, maybe unidentified species, or maybe one that's way larger than they've anticipated, living in, you know, the northern waters, which, you know, they don't explore tremendously. You know, you don't see these big deep dive expeditions up there. But
right.
When I was reading this, I thought, you know who did, though? You know who didn't do the deep dive, but you know who sailed these areas a lot? Vikings. Norsemen.
Oh, yeah.
And what kind of stories do you hear in some of these old Viking tales about these exact type of sea serpents? You know, that would wrap themselves around these Viking ships. What do you see on the front of those old Viking ships? That horse sea serpent head.
That's true, yeah.
You know, so it really kind of makes you wonder. I was talking about this with Amanda the other night. We were talking about dragons. I said, you know, people didn't make up everything. They drew what they saw. Mm-hmm. So it really makes you wonder, were there creatures that were similar to this that people saw at this time? Especially like when you talk about ancient China and, you know, because that dragon imagery, also very similar to this type of sea serpent.
Yeah.
You're like, was there a creature in ancient China that inspired these drawings? Did the artist just completely make it up? There are so many of them. You have to think they got inspiration from something. It may not be that fire breathing idea when we hear the word dragon, but there could have been a creature that had that look that, you know, we now have termed a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, think about it. Artists, you know, movie producers, authors, they've all done it. They've taken a creature that we know and given it either some type of anthropomorphic characteristic, or they've given it some type of superpower, whether it's a gigantic bird, you know, that could swoop down and pick up a grown man off the ground. You know, it's some kind of insane bat that has giant screams and can deafen people, whatever. You know, so you see this big creature, and at some point, this creature breathes fire.
Yeah.
In some type of painting or imagery or story. So that always fascinates me. But when I read this, I thought, you know, what the Vikings talked about this. The Vikings had imagery like this. And now we're talking about people on, you know, this side of the Atlantic having seen something similar and fossils that indicate that maybe there is something out there. Or there was. It's fascinating. But it was really cool to me that you've got all of this going on right on this one island. You know, just, you know, everything from, you got a haunted theater, you got a haunted lighthouse, you've got a phantom ship, and now you've got a sea serpent around this one island.
I know. It's almost makes you wonder if there, I don't like the term vortex in the sense of, you know, oh, this is a energy vortex, but use it as like a vortex of where things come together.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this is a place because of its location and everything that with the sea coming there, it's an island. So it's, you know, potentially reachable from all sides. And I wonder if something like that adds to why there's so much that goes on here.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the land. Well, there's obviously history that runs way back before the European settlers got there.
Right.
And they were seeing this serpent way back then. So I wonder if there's something about this area. We've talked about the land a lot in this episode.
Yeah.
But something about this land that just says, hey, everything kind of gets drawn here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Really, really cool. All right. So what do you guys think? I mean, is all this going on Prince Edward Island? You know, if we've got any listeners up there or in that area, I'm sure you've heard these stories. Let us know. Maybe you've got some stories that we didn't find. You know, let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Go on Facebook, search the graveyard. You'll find it. We really set this up so people would have a safe place to come and share some of these experiences without the worry of being made fun of. And, you know, we may drop some things out there to kind of prompt some discussion. You know, I did that the other day, you know, about some, you know, ghosts in hospitals and things like that. You know, we love to share the jokes and the memes, but it's a great place to come and share or hear some of these personal experiences. So if you haven't checked that out, please do. And then don't forget to go and look at our website. It's graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And as we talked extensively at the beginning of the show, look, we've got a huge back catalog. You get our other show, Side Quest, for our $10 folks. Look, it's a great way to help out the show and get access to some fantastic material that we've put out over the years. So don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Remember, it helps us come up the charts and it makes it easier for people to find the show and just brings more people into the graveyard. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.